Welcome back to You Can With AI, a seven-part series on AI from KPMG that's part exploration, part blueprint, and focused on helping you and your organization fully leverage the AI opportunity. Today's episode is all about the key technical infrastructure that gives your AI the context it needs. Data readiness is one of the most important challenges facing any organization trying to leverage artificial intelligence. To discuss those challenges and how to overcome them, I'm joined by Daniel Beringer, who leads data modernization as a principal for KPMG Advisory. All right, Danielle, welcome to You Can With AI. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for spending some time with us today. We were just talking about this before we started. This is a topic where if people know nothing else about some of the changes that they're going to need to undergo or undertake to get ready for this wild new world of AI and agents, they have some sense that there's this part about data, these changes that they need to be made and this thinking that they need to have. And so we're going to dig into, I think, what that means. But to kick us off, if you could just give us a little bit of your background and the context that you're bringing to this conversation, I think that would be super helpful.
Yeah, happy to. So I am a partner at KPMG in our data modernization practice. My area of responsibility is enterprise data strategy and AI strategy for our clients. I have a portfolio of offerings that includes things like data products, the life cycle of what that looks like, how they're curated, and how they're really changing the way people interact around data, particularly driving towards business value. Data marketplaces. We have a concept called the data value chain, which is finally cracking the code on giving people some quantitative information on how to put a value on doing a data project, on doing data, you know, master data management, pursuing data foundations for Gen AI. I also have a support for chief data officers. So previously, prior to KPMG, I was the chief data officer at Nissan here in Middle Tennessee, right outside Nashville. And I've spent my professional career as a software engineer and data engineer, really passionate about data. And I could not be more excited about where we're headed with the advancement of AI ML and hopefully a more satisfying way for people. I think in the past, people struggled with getting the ROI on their AI ML projects. And now with the promise of Gen AI, it's really opening that aperture to many more personas that maybe didn't have the opportunity to use those types of technologies, but also in a much more user-friendly way through the interfaces that come with that. So it's great to be here today. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, there's so much to dig into. I think I want to purposefully start very high level. And as we were discussing, there's going to be a wide sort of array of listeners to this. But let's start on the fundamental core question to level set people. Why does data matter for AI? How does it contribute to the success or failure of AI or agentic deployments?
Great question. The way that data is the foundation for AI, ML, and Gen AI is really, I want people to think of it as a precursor or a prerequisite, right? High quality data that is well understood, that has contextual understanding for people, and the utility of that data. So I like to use an example, and I think we'll maybe carry this through our conversation. If you think about being in a grocery store, when you take a product off the shelf, it has a label on it, right? It tells you what it is, where it was manufactured, and you can get a pretty good idea about its purpose. When we think about data as the fuel for AI, you have to know what the utility is, right? Not many people go in a grocery store and take dog food off the shelf and start eating it as a snack, you know, while they're shopping. It's poor utility, right? So if people can understand the data, what its contents are, its provenance and where it came from, and what it is supposed to be used for, that's a really effective way of connecting those data foundations to what you want AI ML to do or what you want Gen AI to do. And I think without that understanding, it's really difficult to overcome those bare bones necessities in order to build successful AI, right? It has to be understood and explainable. And it also empowers people. So there's this interaction that's now required where you have business stakeholders and technologists that are supporting some of these systems. They have to, it's a team sport, right? Data is a team sport. And so, you know, making sure that people understand what the data is going to be used for, what certifies it to be used for AI, And, you know, what are the outcomes, right? They won't be able to understand the outcomes or really get the innovation or the value they need without starting with that high fidelity, high quality data at the beginning of that process.
Super helpful. I maybe to try to make this even more crisp in the context of AI, let's try to find an example of, or if we could, using AI that is taking, particularly I'm taking Gen AI, that is using data versus just sort of raw, you know, zero shot, non-contextual AI. Because I think that people, sometimes they're when they think of Gen AI, they're thinking about just rocking up to ChatGPT, you know, in off hours using their Gmail, looking for something. And the data that it has access to is whatever it was trained on and whatever it searches. That's sort of different in the enterprise, presumably, in terms of the types of use cases that are going to be valuable. So what's an example of kind of plugging in data that makes the same tool more functional, more useful for, you know, in that enterprise context?
Yeah, I think that in an enterprise context, you know, if you consider like retrieval augmented generation or a RAG, there's a lot of opportunity with having an interface that people can converse with their data, ask questions, right? We get into the kind of category of like prompt engineering. If you have an existing organization of any kind, right, it can really be, it can be in automotive, it can be in financial services, it can be in consumer and retail. If you have a large body or a large corpus of information, whether it's, you know, documents that are on SharePoint, Excel spreadsheets, databases, if you think about all of that data being accessible to people in a non-manual way, right, the metadata about that data, right, who is using it? We call this sometimes the social metadata, right? You've got kind of your technical and business metadata, but this social metadata, that's accessible. And it allows people to ask different types of questions, right? They don't know how to, they don't need to know how to write SQL. They could have an interface that is provided, you know, if they're accustomed to ChatGPT, right? Things are embedded now in applications. So Gen AI is meeting people where they are, right? They're not required to necessarily have a huge lift in changing their technical understanding. They're able to use natural language to ask questions. And when the Gen AI offering or solution that they're using is grounded in the corpus of their own data, they're going to recognize that context a lot faster, right? It's not just like an internet search. It's actually grounded in the corporate data in which they live, whether they're in the finance function or supply chain, whether they're in sales and marketing. That data is more familiar to them. And so they're conversing in a way with data that's been curated specific to their need. And I think that's the difference between, you know, when you looked at like AI ML and models that, you know, they may have a data scientist in a business division, you know, that was very much hands off for probably the rest of the knowledge workers. And now everyone is involved in it and it's much more accessible. And the interfaces are so much more improved. You know, they're not just getting this outcome from a traditional model. So I think that the understanding of the data, the accessibility, and then it being grounded in data that probably they're traversing in a very manual way, you know, looking through hundreds of documents, et cetera. It really shortens that time to insights.
Yeah, I think that word that you use, context, is obviously very important here, right? The data creates the context for the specific applications of AI inside, you know, the operational space that you're working within. So let's talk about this concept of data readiness. And first of all, I'd love to know sort of what are the set of terminologies that people are using to kind of describe this. But what does data readiness actually mean? And what are some of the steps? What does it take to actually sort of go from the way that data is organized or disorganized today into making it usable by AI applications?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about data modernization or data readiness, we're looking at people, process, and technology around data. So this is not just a technology play, right? I like to say that the presence of technology does not equal success, but adoption does. So if we think about data governance, which is a very traditional term, and I think a lot of people don't look at that with enthusiasm, right? It doesn't sound like it's something exciting to do. We're looking at fundamental things like data quality, you know, and what are the criteria for data to be considered fit for use, right? So you have kind of the dimension of data quality, you have the business glossary, the definitions of what that data means, right? The criteria, the way in which it's to be used, all of the core data management functions, right, or foundations of data governance include processes around it, right? So who is the data owner or the data steward? What is the terminology that should be used so that people have context? The types of activities, so the processes, right? If data is being prepared to train an AIML model, or data is being prepared to serve a Gen AI agent, let's say, there's multiple people that have to be involved around that. The business context, to use that term context again, is so, so important. I would say that we have augmentation of some of the things that used to have to be done manually. I'll give you an example. If data was being prepared for data and analytics, traditionally, you would have a data architect who was doing like logical and physical data modeling, identifying the schema, validating the architecture of the tooling that's going to serve that data through the data pipelines so that ultimately it can land somewhere and then be consumed by knowledge workers, analysts, executives in some sort of a, you know, operational reporting tool, visual analytics, et cetera, right? So that life cycle now is augmented itself with Gen AI. So people don't have to do manual labeling and classification, which is one of the steps in data preparation, right? Maybe that data pipeline that's transforming the data from raw data into an aggregated data set now has automation, and the metadata is, you know, being enriched as it's going through that process in an automated fashion instead of by a human. This is where we get into the whole human in the loop. I think now, you know, we know that data quality and context and involvement of key business stakeholders who have the knowledge, it makes it so much easier to kind of tick and tie all of those steps that have to happen. And half of those steps to get that data prepared can now be done using Gen AI itself. This is things like automatically seeding a catalog, you know, as your data is moving across a system, having interfaces where people can very quickly check and validate the utility of that. The most exciting part is to see how other people are accomplishing the tasks they need to in order to get that data ready. So if data readiness used to take, you know, a couple weeks, it can be done in a matter of hours or days, again, through the use of the right people being involved, having a low ramp to entry, you know, their skill set. They need some minor training, but it's relatively easy to interact with some of the innovation. And then ultimately, you're getting that certified data ready much, much faster than ever before.
What is the state of data readiness inside big companies right now? And this is obviously, presumably there's sort of a huge spectrum, but, you know, on average, what are the types of things that you guys see as you, you know, go to help a client or a customer think about these types of issues?
Yes. I think there's three primary patterns that I observe across every sector. The first is organizations that are going through a large ERP transformation, right? And it's a long road. There is a lot of work to be done for kind of core finance and ERP orchestration. And clients come to us and say, we want to do more things with our data while we're on this longer transformation journey. And we know that we need to put in place some key data foundations like master data management, data quality, understanding critical data elements that need to flow from the ERP system out into the rest of the organization. That's probably the first pattern. And there is some data readiness that can happen in data preparation in the source systems, but there's a lot of other things that have to intersect with that for augmenting and enriching the data, you know, with other types of data, third-party data products or other internal data. So that's kind of pattern one. Pattern two is similar to what we've just talked about, where people want to pursue AIML or Gen AI, and they have kind of foundational data readiness challenges. Perhaps they don't have a formal organization where they can define the working model of how do we interact with data to prepare it. So maybe they don't have defined data stewards or defined data governance. Often we see the lack of a data quality tool or a data catalog. So, you know, they know they have to kind of get this cornerstone of understanding their data and having it in a portfolio that is, you know, labeled, classified, understood, domains identified, and that's kind of the precursor to AIML. The third pattern is where we have some more mature clients that have already created a data product factory, they have a data lakehouse, you know, they're doing analytics and data science at scale, and they want to get into monetization and commercialization. And so that's really an interesting pattern in that it often starts in one or two business areas. Largely, we see a lot of that happening in the finance organization. It's not unlike the ERP transformation, where we see finance data products like order to cash, record to report, moving to a wider audience that's consuming it in an organization. And with that, people are getting access to data that they never had access to before. So that also is a pattern where privacy controls and role-based access controls and an elevated security really permits more people to start participating in the consumption of that data. And that's really where we see some interesting use cases. But overall, many organizations still need help with their enterprise data strategy. Maybe they've got good care and feeding over some types of their activities like master data management, but they don't have the readiness in other areas around broad adoption of certified data. And that's really where you'll see more popularity with catalogs and enrichment. And now for all of those patterns, all of the hyperscalers and data management providers have dramatically improved the capabilities that are in these systems. So like I said, there's more automation. There are more capabilities that are catered to different personas. So we love to talk about persona-based design. And so the data readiness is part of it is understanding the data capability that's appropriate for the person's role. How are they going to consume the data? And let's give them the best possible interface or access that makes sense for their job function.
It sounds like part of the story here, too, is that almost no matter where an organization is on the spectrum, there's always a next thing that they're thinking about in terms of their data. It's
Absolutely.
Not like you get to an end point and you're like, great, our data's ready.
It's a journey, not a destination. Absolutely.
So within an organization, how much variance is there around this? I mean, how much is this sort of balkanized department by department? How central is data now? Does data strategy need to be? Who are the key stakeholders as someone's trying to think through these issues?
Normally, when we're engaged to talk about enterprise data strategy or advanced data modernization, right, whatever flavor of that may be, whether it is specific to a transformation project, specific to use cases that need to be accomplished, or if it's functionally led, I would say, 85% of the time we see one or two business areas that are more advanced in an organization, and they're really hungry to drive innovation, right? Often they become the pilots for whatever the initiative is. They're like, we want to do more with our data. We're ready. We've staffed up or we've started to think about a new target operating model. I've had clients that have just been starting kind of formalizing data shared services and formalizing an AI COE, right? That has to be rooted in a trusted AI foundation and framework so that everyone knows how to operate around AI. And that's always really interesting and exciting to see because then you've got a few innovation areas that are everyone else is observing in the organization. And I would say the most important thing there is value determination, right? So when we see clients that have pockets of innovation and we want to bring everybody else on the journey, our guidance to them is please do some quantitative measurement of the value being delivered by this AI program, right? So we call that the data value chain. That's definitely a key observation there. The ones that are more in their early stages, I think their challenges are not technological. So it's very rare that we find a client that doesn't already have some technology footprint. What often happens is they've either over-indexed and they have every technology under the sun, but like two people are using it over here and there's three people using a different technology. So their portfolio is really heavy. There's just a lot going on. And so they'll come to us and they'll, ask for our support with a cost takeout or optimization. And we kind of, again, map that capability to the users, how are people consuming it? The people and process side is often the biggest challenge where they have a lack of resources with the skills that are needed in order to do certain use cases. They have processes that are very prolonged for people to get to data. And so people, they give up. They're like, I can't do this. I've waited too long. And that opportunity to use that data for innovation has passed. So I would say, broadly speaking, people and process are where we find people need the most help. With the technology side, it's either pruning and refining the technological environment, or it's helping them select best-in-class tooling. So maybe they've had some existing data and analytics tooling, AI, ML, MLOps tooling, or things that they want to use for data science, and they want our opinion on for our environment, for the cloud we've selected, for our type of use cases? What is the architectural reference pattern that is best for us to achieve these business outcomes? And the most important thing is, business strategy needs to be aligned to data strategy, needs to be aligned to AI strategy. And that is true of all of our clients and anyone that wants to pursue that, because that's truly where you can achieve this kind of roadmap of people, process, technology that all need to be augmented and advanced.
You mentioned some of them, sort of the heaviness of in certain organizations, but what are some of the other biggest challenges you often see as relates to these issues?
I think there's often a gap between the executive level understanding of the data ecosystem and the working level. So when we do engagements, we start with what we call an inside-out assessment. We have an assessment called DOTS, which is data, organization, technology, strategy, and insights. And it is a survey that really probes into the perception at multiple levels of the organization of how are you using data as a strategic asset? What's the internal opinion? And when we see, and almost every time, there's great diversity between what senior leaders and working level say about data accessibility and the way people are, you know, governing data. That tells us a lot culturally. And I think that's a big thing that we observe. And it helps us bubble to the surface without judgment some opportunities for them, right? Whether it's creating a working group around data or it's informing the executives in a better way what the challenges actually are. So I would say that's a big one. Gap in understanding or gap in, you know, opinion on the value of data itself. We recently did a data product survey to get a sense from people across every different industry. If you're curating data products, if you're taking this more contemporary approach to governance, because really data products is finally empowering business stakeholders to be the product owner and to drive that curation process. It's not an IT job or a technical job. It is a data product owner in the business that has that responsibility. And so this survey basically uncovered, you know, your question around what are the challenges. Some of those challenges were the gap, you know, in understanding of value, but largely it was the inability to see across silos in many organizations. And what that does is inevitably people are making copies of copies of copies of data, and they're all actually doing very similar activities with it, but they don't know each other. And so I think that the cultural aspect is probably the biggest challenge. The amount of efficiency and cost takeout and transformation of people's roles, once you give people a place that they can communicate about data, you deduplicate projects immediately. I'll even give my own experience as a chief data officer. Some of our initiatives, when we were seeding data and making it accessible to more people, we could take a list of 25 projects in a certain business area and cut it down to like 4, because all of those projects are going to be using those same data products to fuel that innovation. And then you really can affinitize that. So I think that's one of the other challenges, is huge lists of projects that people want to accomplish that aren't centered on the data. And if you simply align those solutions to the data products that power them, you can do a huge, you know, optimization from a human resources standpoint for the people that need to be involved in those projects. You can much more easily accomplish the outcomes you wanted with, you know, a significant reduction in hours and resources. And then ultimately, more people are all pointed at this kind of holy grail of certified data instead of the sprawl that inevitably occurs. And that's the other challenge, is organizations that do not regularly prune, retire legacy data products or, you know, ETL jobs or pipelines, that's a big issue. And so you see this huge sprawl. It's operationally very complex and expensive. And those are some of the biggest ones, I would say.
Has Gen AI broadly heightened awareness of these issues? Mm-hmm. I was going to ask at this stage, are executives by and large bought into these things? Do you still see resistance to doing what needs to be done?
I think Gen AI has been absolutely fantastic in elevating people's awareness of the necessity for good data. And so, yes, everyone is bought in. Every client we encounter, knows the promise of Gen AI when pointed at the right problem, when supported by the right process to get data ready and to determine the use cases that are the most valuable. So I think there's kind of this enthusiasm first. Initially, it was fear. So we did our Gen AI survey several times over the last 2 years to see if there was a difference in sentiment from when ChatGPT first came out, right, and was starting to be used and tinkered with to, you know, more currently. Initially, there was more fear and resistance and kind of being risk averse and concern. Not to the point of like Terminator, like robots are coming for us, you know, and we're all going to die. It wasn't to that degree, but it was definitely, you know, I'm not willing to make an investment yet until I know more about what this looks like. And I think people wanted to be on the sidelines of let's let some other organizations go first, right? And then when we feel like it's safe, we'll follow. But then, you know, 6 months later, when we did the survey again, sentiment was really around, there was this kind of excitement and the realization that use cases could be accelerated. I call it the data time machine, right? If you have your data curated and you're starting to really think about the data foundations, you're compressing the time it's taking people to work on data. You know, maybe they were spending 40 hours a week before wrangling data to get what they needed to do their executive presentation at the end of the month. If you compress that to, you know, 5 hours, 10 hours, then all of that time is freed up, right? And they can pull ahead projects that they weren't going to work on for 2 years. That's why we saw that enthusiasm, because the use of Gen AI and putting in place appropriate data practices allowed people to have the time to then work on these other things. And I think that flywheel is what really got people excited. There is still absolutely concern and risk, but with people adopting trusted AI frameworks and the correct organizational construct and the way of working, you know, whether it's an AI COE, whether it's a process that joins business and IT together to understand the life cycle for that Gen AI offering, it's definitely more, I think, validated in the market as well. People are starting to see some of these large scale applications launch. They're excited about agentic AI and having this concept of a digital teammate that takes some of the mundane things they used to do on a day-to-day basis and actually takes care of it and then comes back. I think that excitement is very tangible in what we see at the executive level, middle management level, and working level, just the difference from, you know, a year ago to now.
Yeah, I was going to ask about agents as well. How much are agents sort of changing the consideration set around data? Or is it more like the hard work that organizations have done over the last couple of years to build these foundations? They're now able to move more quickly when it comes to sort of this next generation of Gen AI.
I definitely think they're better equipped to move more quickly, and for several reasons. One is the use of Gen AI itself on data preparation, right? So, you know, we've compressed the tasks that nobody really wanted to do before, and the observations that are coming with like data observability tooling. I think that the catalogs being augmented and being able to talk more directly, you know, in natural language with, you know, a Gen AI interface has really helped people to get to a place where they're starting to get ideas about new ways to apply Gen AI to traditional problems. I think in the beginning, people didn't know what it could do. And now that they've experienced it and in their personal lives, everyone, not everyone, a lot of people are using Gen AI on a day-to-day basis. So as it's becoming part of just normal life, it's extending into their jobs. You know, maybe they tinkered with something at home, you know, with their kids or with their family. And they're like, wait a second, I can actually apply this to the way I'm doing that monthly process at work, right? So I think that, you know, you're seeing those things converge. There's like this creative lift that I see now that I didn't see 6 months ago when people are thinking about, rather than doing this standard dashboard or this report or this process, they're also getting more familiar with like integration and the way that tools that they use every day are interacting with one another. And that's what I mean when I say Gen AI is coming into existing interfaces. You know, look at Microsoft Copilot. It's lowering that barrier to entry for them to think creatively about new ways to do their job.
Whether it's for people who are just getting started on this journey or even for more advanced organizations, as you kind of survey the next 6 months, right, the rest of 2025, is there any key advice that you would point people towards as they think about data and Gen AI and the next steps here?
Yeah, I think my advice would be an active learner and don't be afraid because no one knows everything, right? This is changing so fast. You know, when we think about how we're creating software and we're creating solutions and accelerators, we are every day having to check, you know, new releases, what's coming out. I would say active learning, reading about some of the new innovation and staying up to speed, you know, on some of the things that are available in the market or are coming is really important. Because again, the opportunity lift, you don't want to miss that, right? There's some incredible things that are done. So whether it's a vendor that people are already working with and understanding what are the new features coming for that vendor, or just reading up on use cases, you know, in their industry. So we love to see the competitive spirit of our clients. When we work with them, we always pull information for them on what are the benchmarks from your competition, what's going on in this space, and what is aspirational, even if it's not in your sector, right? If you are in manufacturing and there's something really amazing going on in healthcare and life sciences, think about how that could apply to your situation. So I think, again, that competitive lens is really important. And I think advocacy for finally solving some of the social and cultural issues that have always been around between business and IT or information system IS, that is really the next horizon, is what is the interaction model around data? Data is the centering mechanism, right, between business functions and IT. Leaning into that, you know, if there's a data working group or a data council that's being established in an organization, get into that organization, create a community, start to share, you know, again, that social metadata about how you're using data in your job. That's where we see our clients really accelerating. The ones that have gone into that, we're seeing massive change. I also always encourage everyone to have some sort of an idea jar or an idea board for future data science use cases or really hard problems that no one's been able to solve yet. Just kind of put it out into the universe in your organization, and maybe people can kind of crowdsource some new ideas based on that. That is a really effective way, even if it's not a formal project, at least to give people an opportunity to tinker, you know, or have a hackathon or have a day where everybody gets together and says, we haven't been able to solve this yet. How can we use Gen AI to help us solve this problem?
I think that we could probably spend the entirety of this You Can With AI series just talking about this, but thank you so much for providing this primer. Look, I think it's going to be really fascinating to get back together and, you know, in season two of this in 6 months and see just how much has changed. But for now, thanks again for sharing this insight.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
This has been You Can With AI. Check out all 7 episodes and learn how you can better integrate AI into your organization today.